The GX starts today with the debrief where JPI reporters discuss the stories they've been covering this week, including concerns over arsenic contamination in Jackson County, Oregon Senator Ron Wyden's thoughts on the recent Grants Pass Supreme Court decision, and fallout from the resignation of a Josephine County commissioner. I'm Eric Newman, JPR's news director.
I'm Roman Battaglia, science, environment, and politics reporter.
I'm Jane Vaughn, housing, homelessness, and education reporter.
I'm Justin Higginbottom, public safety and health reporter.
And I'm James Kelly, JPR's news intern for the summer.
Justin, we're going to start with you. You reported on arsenic contamination in a community in the Rogue Valley. Can you tell us how you stumbled across this story?
Yeah, so I was reporting on PFAS contamination in drinking water. That's man-made chemicals that can have serious health impacts. And according to California law, residents need to be notified of PFAS contamination in their water if it reaches a certain level. And I basically spent a weekend driving around to mobile home parks in Northern California speaking to residents that hadn't received that notification. We posted that story, and then someone got in touch with me that lives in a mobile home park in Shady Cove in the Rogue Valley, and she says that their park had been struggling with arsenic contamination. And arsenic's, it's pretty, you know, normal in the Rogue Valley. It's in the geology, it's in the soil, and properties generally have an arsenic treatment system to filter that out if they're at risk of it. But it can be pretty dangerous if it hits the federal maximum contaminant level and consumed over long term. It can lead to a bunch of health impacts, including cancer.
And so what did you find out was happening at this community in Shady Cove?
So kind of similar to PFAS in California, if arsenic levels are above this federal limit in Oregon, then the owners of the property need to let residents know, and that's according to state rules. But Blazer hadn't been receiving those public notices. She actually found out about arsenic in her water from a neighbor, and that got her interested in just what the water situation was at her park. And she found out a lot. Basically, she went on the Oregon Health Authority's webpage. It has a lot of information about public water systems in our state, like water test samples, and if public notices should have been sent out, they're posted there, and site visits and things. And she found out the park's been struggling for years with arsenic, and the arsenic treatment system has been waiting on approval for the last 3 years. So she basically lost trust in the park owners, in the OHA and regulatory agencies, and she started testing the water herself using a private lab and her own money. She tested on March 16th, which showed the park had double the federal limit of arsenic. And that same day, just coincidentally, the park owners had also tested the water, but the data they sent to the OHA said the water had been below the federal limit. And someone from Jackson County said that was just an honest mistake because the water operator at the park took a sample from the wrong location. So at this point, the residents just really lost trust in the park owners, water system operator, the OHA. They're buying their own bottled water. Here's one person I spoke with, Carrie Utsi, talking about that park owner.
All I know is that the person that's in charge now, I wouldn't trust him any further than I can spit, and I don't spit very far.
Okay, some pretty strong reactions from residents at this mobile home park. So you mentioned some potential problems in how the Oregon Health Authority monitors and regulates water in the state. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so this brought up, you know, some wider issues of monitoring drinking water in the state. Basically, the OHA relies on water test samples taken by property owners. Those owners send those results or the water to a lab, get the results, and send those results to the OHA. But there's no audit system in place to really check to see if those results are accurate or if they're taking samples from the right source, unless something just really goes wrong, like a resident like Blazer complains. So we really have no idea the accuracy of the water sample data provided to the state. They're also not checking to see if residents get these required public notices if their water does have contamination.
And so what was the response by the park owners and OHA to these concerns?
So the OHA says they have an agreement with the park owners to kind of get their water up to code, get their arsenic treatment system approved. Park owner I spoke with said they're complying with the state. In terms of auditing, the OHA says that the lack of legal access to private property, they can't just, you know, just walk on anyone's property and start taking test samples, and the lack of funding prohibit the agency from doing something like a random audit of test samples throughout the state. And they also said it's not practical for them to check to see if every resident has received a public notice if their water is contaminated. There are thousands of water systems in the state, so I could see how that would be difficult.
And so just zooming out, what's the situation now with the park? Should residents be worried about arsenic contamination?
So all residents are getting public notices now. That's probably thanks to Blazer. And the latest tests show there's no arsenic in the water. So residents probably aren't at risk. But just at this point, they've just lost trust. And some of them are even chipping in for those water sample tests that Blazer is still taking. And after speaking with them, I'm just not sure if the trust in the OHA and the water system operator will return anytime soon.
Okay. Well, thanks for following that. Roman, we're going to turn to you now. You covered a decision by the Oregon Land Use Board of Appeals to reverse a change made by the Josephine County Commissioners this week, or recently, to their local fire protection requirements. What was this board's decision? Tell us about this.
Yeah, so a week ago, this land use board sided with this local nonprofit, Rogue Advocates, and they were appealing a decision made by commissioners to change these fire protection requirements, and they did that back in February. And so the board said, essentially, you know, in this opinion, that they violated – the county violated state law, and, you know, these changes went against the county's own goals that they have set for fire protection.
So – tell us a little bit about what these changes were that Josephine County Commissioners made to their code, and how did they justify making them?
Yeah, I think they're a little complicated and hard to explain, and that was kind of the hard part about the story. You know, it partially has happened because there's a lot of residents in Josephine County that aren't part of what's called a fire protection district. A lot of people who live, you know, in the area just outside of Grants Pass aren't part of this fire protection district, which is, for people who don't know, it's the place, you know, where people pay taxes to a fire department and they protect your buildings. You know, most people live in cities or have a fire department. And so, you know, for people building new homes, making major renovations in these areas, they need to provide some sort of proof that either you live in a fire district, you subscribe to a private firefighting company, or that you have the equipment and the means, like, to fight a fire on your own, like having a water source.
Okay.
You know, so I think that, you know, for some landowners, they don't really have the option to be in a fire district because they aren't in one, and attempts to form one have failed because a lot of people in Josephine County don't want the extra tax. And so they only really have either the option to fight the fire on their own, which can be expensive to build a giant water tank, or you have to subscribe to a private firefighting company. And right now there's only one, Rural Metro Fire. And so Josephine County Commissioners, in order to, you know, not force them to subscribe to one fire company and turn that into a monopoly, they relaxed those requirements. So what they did is that they made it so that only people living in forest land had to meet these requirements rather than just all rural areas. And they added an additional way to meet this requirement, which is by being what's in a forest protection district. These are districts that are run by the Oregon Department of Forestry. And if you have property in them, you have to pay ODF for this wildfire protection, where they'll come in and, you know, protect your property against wildfire. So the county said that living in a forest protection district counted as having fire protection and you didn't need to do anything else. Their argument also was that this specific part of the county code was about preventing fire from spreading from one property to another and not protecting a house itself. There's other parts of the code that, you know, protect homes. And so ODF's role is to prevent wildfires from spreading. So that should count as that fire protection.
Okay. So we had this decision from the court, which sided with Rogue Advocates. What did Rogue Advocates say in their argument against these changes?
Yeah. So they say that the county was misinterpreting the state law. You know, they say that the state law refers specifically to rural fire protection districts, which is a specific thing, and that forest protection districts are different, and that the goal of the state law is to protect houses and not just the property around it. That's also important because ODF doesn't provide any protection to houses at all. So, you know, just being in a forest protection district doesn't mean you have that protection.
And so what happens now? Like, what does this mean for residents?
Yeah, so that essentially just means that, you know, they're going to reverse and go back to the original requirements. So homeowners will still need to prove they have some form of fire protection, even if they live in a forest protection district. The county said they're discussing their next steps. I think that they could ask a judge to review the order, and they have 21 days to file a petition if they wanted to do that.
Okay. Thanks, Roman. Jane, so you covered a press conference yesterday in Grants Pass from Senator Ron Wyden. What was the reason for his visit?
So he was visiting to talk about two bills that he's introduced. One of them was reintroduced in March of 2023, and one is from January. And he says these bills are going to help the state build more affordable housing. So one of them, for example, uses solutions like housing choice vouchers to work on housing affordability, and one of them has tax credits for more affordable housing. So he was trying to talk about these two bills.
Okay. And so these are not new bills. Why is he talking about them right now?
Because there was a major U.S. Supreme Court decision at the end of June, which I've talked about a lot. The U.S. Supreme Court upheld Grants Pass's ban against homeless people camping in public spaces. It's been this longstanding legal case. And now Senator Wyden is saying that these bills are going to help the city and the state build more affordable housing and help with the homeless problem as well. At the press conference, some local officials were talking as well from the city of Grants Pass about some solutions that they would like to see. So, for example, I talked about housing choice vouchers, but someone from the city, Amber Neek, was saying that even if you have a housing choice voucher, a lot of people still can't get housing because there just isn't enough housing available, or the housing choice voucher isn't for enough money. You know, the rents in Grants Pass are too high, so they're not actually super effective. So she was suggesting that the senator look at that as well.
Okay. And so what else is the city doing to address these problems since the Supreme Court's recent decision?
So they're working on doing some land rezoning and increasing building density, basically trying to make it easier to build more housing, more affordable housing, building smaller scale apartments. And they also have to figure out how to comply with this state law that was passed in 2021, saying that if you're going to have homeless people camping, you have to be objectively reasonable, in air quotes, as you figure out how to do that. And the city hasn't had to do that because there's been this ongoing legal case. So now they're trying to figure out how to comply with that state law in the last couple weeks.
Okay. Thanks so much, Jane. Now we're going to turn to James. James, it looks like there's been some lively discussion lately between the Josephine County commissioners and a member who recently resigned. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, that's right. So former Commissioner Dan DeYoung appeared in a business session this week to give a public comment in front of the two remaining commissioners, saying he was resigning effective immediately. He showed up and gave a passionate speech about feeling sort of isolated within the county's existing structure of government. He said morale is really at an all-time low. Basically called out the two remaining commissioners for not trying to, you know, govern as a cohesive unit. He did not mention a recent incident where he was found in violation of the county's sexual harassment policy following an investigation. And his speech frustrated the commissioners, especially because DeYoung left after he gave his comment. You know, Commissioner Barrett Sugar said there's a rebuttal process. He knows how this works. And so basically, he left after the meeting, and they were frustrated. And Commissioner Bearshiger said it is possible to be productive in the government as a minority. You know, he served in the Oregon State Senate minority for 8 years.
And so what led up to all this?
Yeah, so they found he was in violation of the county's sexual harassment policy. This was a meeting on July 2nd, and the incident in question is a moment where he interrupts Finance Director Sandy Novak, who's in the middle of presenting some information, and he tells her to sit on his lap, basically. And in the video, it looks like he might not have realized there was some available seating, but the remark was definitely shocking to a lot of people. And so people who were at the meeting came forward and complained about the incident, as well as a few members of the public. And the next day, DeYoung apologized, saying he agreed the comment was unprofessional. You know, he says he's a smart aleck. And so a week later, Novak shows up and makes a public comment at a business session, calling DeYoung out for his behavior and saying he objectified her. She said people also came to Dan DeYoung's defense, saying, you know, oh, that's just Dan being Dan. And then she basically was like, this is not an isolated incident. There was an investigation. And as punishment, DeYoung was told he was to have limited interaction moving forward with Novak, and was given a written warning and reprimand. He also had to take classes. And then a week after that, DeYoung issued a very brief press release saying he was planning to resign.
Okay. And I should say this was all documented in public meeting videos, right. Both in response to this incident, during this incident, and then DeYoung responding after the fact to the two remaining Board of Commissioners. So before this this recent press release that came out, was he talking about resigning at all?
No. In fact, he said, the people of Josephine County put me in this job. They'll have to take me out, basically, and talked about, you know, pointing people towards the process of a recall. He seemed pretty firm that basically the only way people could get rid of him would be for him to resign, which he did not intend to do.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it there for now. That is it for this week's debrief. Thanks for listening. You can reach the newsroom with comments about our coverage and suggestions for things that we should cover in the future through our news tip line. You can find that on our website at ijpr.org. You can find this program and more on our website at jeffexchange.org, or you can subscribe on Apple, Spotify, and all the other platforms.